We are going to take some couple more calls on Matt Hancock. If you've got something to say, feel free. Sajid Javid as well. But I'm also going to move on in the next hour to technology, privacy and security. And this rather does link in as well. I'm going to be joined by the tech expert Fevzi Turkalp, who is editor of Gadget Detective, the tech advice website. And I haven't warned Fevzi about this, but one of the things I'd like to ask him about is these sort of security devices and spy devices, and being able to maybe put a camera in something like a smoke alarm. And could you actually hack into that as well? And on a more down-to-earth basis as well, how safe is your data and what can you do to keep your data safe? That plus any other technology queries, if you want some advice on what to buy, the latest phone, the latest earphones, whatever your question, you can call in. Fevzi will be with me live after the news on LBC.
On your radio, on Global Player, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
LBC, good morning. I'm Clive Bull with you till four. Later on, talking about smoking and vaping. Should it be going on in pub gardens now that so many people are eating and drinking outside? We'll get a view on that. And we're going to be talking technology in this hour as well. Joining me shortly will be the tech expert Fevzi Turkalp, who's going to talk, for one thing, about privacy and security and how to protect your data. I want to ask him about these secret cameras as well, that may or may not have been used with Matt Hancock. And if you have a question of a technical nature, doesn't have to be a complicated one, it might be a quite simple one about what to buy, what the latest phones are, TVs, whatever your question, feel free to call in with that as well, because Fevzi will be joining us live in a few minutes' time. But let's take another call now. It's David in Hammersmith. Hello, David.
Hi, good morning.
Morning. What would you like to say?
Well, I'd like to come up the Matt Hancock story from a different angle, and it should lead into your next segment, which is that, okay, he's done his catalogue of things. They're all inappropriate, questionable, and I think it was right he should go. But there is this aspect of data protection. Now, the basis of data protection is a lawful basis for the collection of the data. And I know that CCTV systems have access control. I used to work in the NHS, and we actually once caught an IT guy who tried to rejig the CCTV to cover up a hit and run he did.
Oh. So
there's an expectation of privacy within that lawful basis for collection, and the data must be held and secured in a secure way. I don't believe that a whistleblower has come forward. What we have had is somebody has stolen some personal data for their own benefit. Now, this is at a time when the government has only slightly delayed selling off all our data to the centre of NHS Digital. And they're all trying to assure us it's all being done, you know, for the right way. And I can tell you, they're avoiding the sort of main bits. But look, I've picked up a neighbour's Wi-Fi that was generated by their camcorder, their CCTV camera. And I had to try and find them. And there were lots of buildings around me. And eventually was able to find somebody in the street I recognised from the pictures, and to tell him his camcorders, his CCTVs were wide open. But the thing is, we have to find who stole this data, and basically charge them with theft and aspects of, you know, basically they will have been in breach of their employment contract. There will be access control to those CCTV images, and it needs to be basically tracked down. It's simply not appropriate for people to be able to steal data they come across within their work to basically make money off. I do think he should have gone for, not so much for this, but for the whole catalogue of things he's done. which I think have been, you know, which I think have been questionable and inappropriate.
Sure.
But I feel stronger about this data security, which is, as I said, has always been lax in the NHS, has always had gaps such as transaction logs from the back-end databases, which allow you to completely reconstruct a database. The anonymization of database, I was able to reconstruct about 90 to 96% of data by combining it with other databases. We did a test on that. Just by, you know, even when data was only taken to a sector level of postcode, you're able to find out the fact that somebody's male, 58, you know, lives in Isleworth or whatever it is. And you're able to figure out which person it is and reconcile. And then once you've done that, you own that person. Data is power. And I think this has really demonstrated it. And it's ironic.
Well, I think it's a very, very interesting point, David, and we're certainly going to come back to that NHS data issue as well. And as you rightly say, it kind of links in nicely as well to technology that we're going to talk about in a moment. David, thank you very much for that. Just going back to Robert Jenrick and what he said about Matt Hancock, apparently he said Matt Hancock was on the job at the time, which was greeted by howls of laughter. So, Paul, thank you very much for explaining that. That was what our caller in Amsterdam was referring to. So let's bring in Fevzi Turkalp now, who joins me, who's editor of GadgetDetective.com. You can get him on Twitter as well, at GadgetDetective. Fevzi, good morning to you.
Morning.
So and I wanted to ask you a little bit about security cameras, first of all. In fact, there's a lot of debate going on about how you can film people and what happens to it. For a start, from what you know, from a technical point of view, would it be possible? I mean, it doesn't appear that this was official CCTV. People are saying it may have been just a little camera hidden somewhere because Matt Hancock couldn't see a camera. So presumably that is perfectly technically possible.
So you have to imagine that that wasn't a standard CCTV camera because it would have taken, you know, a great deal of risk to do what he did in front of cameras that were known to him to be there. And I've heard reports this evening that Whitehall is sweeping its buildings to see if there are any other such cameras there, which again would tend to suggest that it was not an official camera. In terms of how easy that is to do, it's now incredibly easy to do. You have consumer cameras now that can be very small, can be hidden in, you know, very small items, even pens. But a larger one would not only have a good lens, but it would have the ability. Some of them now don't even rely on being able to log on to the local Wi-Fi. They have SIM cards in them. So as long as that SIM card is on a network that can get signal, it can record locally. It could beam the video footage away, or it could record it on a SIM card on the camera itself. So it can be completely freestanding. It will have a battery, a rechargeable battery. It will have a SIM card for the data connection, and the ability to store that footage locally as well. So, and that can be bought for less than £200. And some of these cameras now are, you know, better than full HD resolution. So, and they can be quite wide angle, so they can capture a wide area. And, you know, you have to be open to the idea that he could have been a victim of a political hit job, you know, because if someone planted that camera and it shouldn't have been there, then it was someone with access, you know, and obviously they shouldn't have been doing what they did. But the fact that someone got access to that area, an area where Matt Hancock obviously felt was secure for him in terms of spying eyes and so forth, and yet was not. So it raises all sorts of implications. In terms of what you can do in the workplace, employers can put cameras in the workplace, but the employees have to know that they're there and their use has to be proportionate. So where they go, obviously you don't put them in bathrooms and toilets and so forth, but also what you use them for has to be proportionate. There has to be a balance, even in the workplace, between a worker's reasonable expectation of privacy against a manager's or owner's right to protect themselves, for example, against theft. This is a difficult area, and it gets more difficult when we talk about, you know, public spaces. So this was a workplace, but if you think about the public spaces now, our protection against, and you know, we're told frequently that Londoners are amongst the most surveilled people in the world. In public, there are so many cameras up. Now, our protection against those, to the extent that we've had it up until now, has been that there are more of us than there are of them, and that it's needed a person to watch each and every one of those cameras in real time. What's happening now is you have artificial intelligence systems that not only can do facial recognition and then match you against a database, or sometimes mismatch you against a database, you know, so people can be, you know, arrested literally because an AI system thinks that that a wanted person is walking down the road. And these sorts of systems, the legal framework to protect us is not in place, and we haven't had the discussion about what sort of society we want to be living in, whether we want to be in a society which is so surveillance-based. There are clearly benefits to that because it makes crime more detectable and sometimes even preventable. But at the same time, you know, if you took it to the extreme, we would all be much more secure if a government official was following us around at all times and noting our conversations. And because we don't physically see that person doing it, we don't quite understand yet that that's what we're approaching. Because, you know, when you go on the tube train, you're tracked with your Oyster card, or on buses, when you drive a car, number plate recognition systems will see who you are. And now when you walk down the street, your face is recognizable. It's linkable to databases. And don't forget, by the way, that this technology, other than the in principle discussion we should have about it, there's also the fact that this technology is not only flawed, but it's racially flawed. It is more like to misidentify people who have non-white skin than people who have white skin. It's just a factor in the way that, you know, the contrast is picked up on cameras and how recognition systems currently work. And therefore, there is a very strong argument to say there should be a moratorium on this sort of technology being used in public spaces. Police authorities around the country have been using it, but I think the legal basis upon which they do so is unclear, and how they use that information, what they use it for, and how long they keep it for. So if, for example, they pick someone up and they think they've identified them, but they've made a mistake, how quickly should they delete that information, or are they allowed to keep it just in case it comes up next time? You know, there's a lot of this is opening up a whole nest of you know, the technology allows us to do things that it was not capable of before, and the implications for our privacy and our society and our democracy. Because if people cannot meet in private, if they cannot discuss in private without the state or large tech giants being able to listen to us, then how does the political democracy work? How can people form new political parties or speak against governments and organize demonstrations if at every turn you know, you've actually got you know, this concept of pre-crime, where technology can spot a crime before it happens. Well, they're doing it now. They're using CCTV cameras in public to spot what an AI system, an artificial intelligence system, believes is suspicious behavior. So before
that was a film, wasn't it?
Yes.
what was that film?
I've forgotten the name of it, but yeah,
what was that film?
It's the one where they were swiping
they can
screens.
Tell you you're
pre-crimes,
going to be,
wasn't it?
Yes, you're going to turn into a criminal before you actually have. Yeah. Tom Cruise was in it, was
yes,
it?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I'm so sorry, I've forgotten the name of it. But
what was it called? Somebody will text us.
Yeah, but the point being that now they look at, for example, youths in the street, and if they look to the AI suspicious, then the AI will dispatch security services, and that's already happening. So this protection that, well, we're relatively safe because there's millions of us and relatively few of them, is no longer the case, because the artificial intelligence systems can look at these things, and if we're lucky, flag it to a human being, and if we're unlucky, take unilateral action of their own.
Well, we'll talk more about this and other technical matters. If you've got a tech question, then Fevzi Turkalp is with me. And thank you. There's a flurry of people now naming Minority Report. That is exactly what it was. And it was a rather good film. But yes, it's come true. Not for the first time. Science fiction has come true, technically. More from Fevzi and me in a moment here on LBC. Tefsi Turkalp is here from GadgetDetective.com. We're talking about technology. Tefsi, before we take some questions, I've got a couple more questions for you just about the security and cameras and so on. First of all, doorbells. I was reading about these. They're all the rage now, these kind of camera doorbells.
Yep.
And actually, the video is turning out to be very useful, not just for checking who's at the door, but it's kind of surveilling who's walking past your door. It's been used to solve crimes.
Yeah.
It's just actually we're kind of fitting up even more cameras than were there already.
Yeah, we are, and we don't actually control those cameras. There have been cases of I won't name the company, but one of the big companies that sells these doorbells in the United States has been doing deals with local law enforcement where it's been providing access to footage from our doorbell and external cameras to law enforcement without our knowledge and consent. So it's like we don't own the footage that these cameras produce. Now, they can be very useful. I was due to get a courier delivery today. Courier didn't turn up, and suddenly the tracking said, try to deliver at 9:56 a.m. It was no one in. And I said, well, which of the two high-definition streams would you like to view for the morning to show that they didn't do that?
Interesting, yes.
You know, so there are clear benefits to it, you know, and cars being stolen off driveways and so forth. By the way, you shouldn't point the cameras... The external cameras shouldn't be pointing out to the public area. It should really just stop in your front garden or your driveway or your property. Sometimes they do go a bit beyond that, but you know it's hard because they tend to be quite wide angle cameras. But yeah, it's definitely, you know, not a double edged sword, but a multifaceted sword. You know, there are such clear benefits. But my feeling is that there has to be a discussion, and the starting point has got to be that we own our own data, and then everything else we can deviate from there by consent. But they shouldn't be able to share footage of your comings and goings using your own cameras. You know, this is akin to, you know, families being charged for the bullet used by the state to kill their children. You know, we are funding, we're paying sometimes more than £1,000 on smartphones and other technology that is being used in some ways against us.
On that point, Declan in Northern Ireland has texted to say, are virtual assistants, you know, the smart speakers and on, are they listening in on our conversations when not active? What can we do to protect ourselves?
Okay. So, they are, well, it's a sort of slightly finessed answer. They are, in strict terms, listening all the time because they're listening for the wake word. But they should only transmit anything over the internet that you say directly following the wake word. So if I say Lexi and then I say something, then by definition, a recording of my request is, because a smart speaker is actually a dumb speaker, right? So what it does is it makes a recording of what we say after the wake word, which is, you know, can be one of those words.
Yeah.
It sends a recording of that to the, you know, let's say Amazon servers, for example, or Google servers. That server is where the smarts is. That then works out what you said, works out what an appropriate answer is, forms a voice synthesized answer, and then sends the recording of that back to the dumb speaker to speak the answer. So all the smarts are on the other side, which is why they're able to provide you with more and more services, despite the fact that your smart speaker, you know, may have been in your home for a number of years. It suddenly develops new services because it doesn't need to upgrade the local device. So it is listening all the time, in that it wouldn't be able to listen for the wake word anyway, but it should only transmit something after that. I did a test with the ones from Amazon. I can't say it's always the case, but I did a test where I tracked the network traffic going to and from Amazon smart speaker to see if it was, you know, calling home when it shouldn't be. And I tested it for quite a period of time and I didn't catch it doing it.
Okay.
So I think in that respect, but the information that we know we're sharing is already quite a lot, because they can do voice recognition on it. You know, there's an option for it to recognize who you are and tell you answers specific to who you are within a family, for example. You know, all sorts of information. And as you say, it's been used to solve crimes. It's been the alibi for some and the downfall of others.
Well, on that point, let's bring in Richard, because he's got a point about this. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Hi, what would you like to say?
I'd like to say that in London, like you rightly say, you are probably the most surveyed and watched in, if not Europe, a greater part of it. London has got face recognition, has had it in for I don't know how long, and you are continually surveyed. But I can't understand, on that basis, how come knife crime's up, rape's up, violent crime's up, theft is up, burglary is up, all the major crimes are up by at least 25% each. So if this technology is being used to recognise who you are, what your movements are...
It's not working. And it's an interesting point, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I mean, one thing I would say on that, Richard, is that the number of times I've had calls from people saying, this crime has happened, we know that it's on CCTV, but we can't get access to it, or the police can't be bothered to look at it, they haven't got the time. Yeah. I mean, that would be one thing I would suggest. What do you think, Fevzi?
So I think we're in a transitional period from footage needing to be pulled by a human being and acted upon by a human being to what we were discussing earlier, which is, you know, AI intervention. Often that footage in public spaces from local authorities and police is often not held for very long. I remember I was involved in a case where we were the victims of fly tipping, and we asked the local authority to pull the footage from the camera, and by the time they prevaricated over it, the footage had been deleted just because they don't keep it for that long. Traditionally, also, these are more a case of trying to help with detection after the event. And we've discussed again how this technology is becoming more proactive because of the ability of an AI to be there. And that's exactly the point. We don't have enough human beings to watch and act upon all this. And to have a human being, you know, if you're looking for a case of fly tipping, to have a human being go through it, you know, day by day, hour by hour, to see if anything new has appeared in on that private premises. So we are still in that transitional period, and I think that this is exactly the time when we should be having a discussion. The government should be laying down laws based upon consultations, and that's just not happening. And as was mentioned earlier by one of your callers, we have this appalling situation where the government is making us opt out of sharing our information with a part of the government who have been quite open about the fact that they intend to sell our data, the last 10 years of our data, to anyone who cares to buy it. I mean, there are some criteria, but I mean, even before you worry about how secure is that data and how easy is it for someone else to hack it, because at the moment, our protection is that all our medical data is scattered. You know, every individual's data is held largely with their own GP, and it would be hard for any individual or group of hackers to hack everybody's data when it's distributed in this way. But when they centralize it in the way that they are doing in preparation for selling it off, then it's much, it's a much bigger target on the back of our data, and much more attractive for hackers to steal that data. But I don't even worry about hackers. I'm just sure that the government will fail. I'm not making a party political point here, because governments of all colours, any government would fail, because they these are difficult problems, and governments are not good at IT.
No, you can say that again. We've got some interesting questions coming up for Fevzi, including about Windows 11. I've got a question here about MP3 players. I've got another question about SSD drives. In this hour, we're talking about technological issues and questions with Fevzi Turkalp, who is from GadgetDetective.com. He's on Twitter as well, at GadgetDetective, if you want to follow up with any other questions. Henry's in Stratford. Hello, Henry.
Good morning, Clive, and good morning to your great expert there.
Hello, Henry.
Good morning. I've got something I would love to know, whether it exists, whether there's such a thing as a device which I can either put on my motorcycle in my shed at home, which would alert my telephone if anyone moves my motorcycle.
Yes, there are various trackers that have started to become quite popular. So you've got Apple have just launched their AirTags. There's a company called Tile, T-I-L-E, that has been producing similar devices called Tiles for some time. And they come in various shapes and sizes. Some of them are like the size of a credit card and can fit in your wallet. Others are tags for your key ring. But there's nothing to stop you fixing one of these tag devices to your motorbike. Now, it used to be that this was a really expensive thing to achieve, that there were systems specifically designed for cars. There still are. Mm. And these
hundreds of pounds worth.
Yeah, and because what you were also paying for was that they had a network of towers with telephone with radio transceivers on them.
Oh.
So that they could triangulate the position. Yeah. I remember doing a test on one. We had one fitted to my car, and then I went and drove it and I hid it in an underground car park and they still found me. Which was quite impressive. But this was many years ago. Nowadays, it can work differently because you've got companies like Apple leveraging the fact that there are so many Apple devices out there, any of which can ping the presence of the AirTag. So you buy one or three of these AirTags, they come as individually or packs of three, and what happens is, so if it's within close range to your home, let's say, you know, within Bluetooth range, then you can detect it using your smartphone using Bluetooth. And that's useful for, let's say, if you mislay keys or something around the house, you can get very, very close to it and find it easily. That same technology can be set up to alert you when it moves out of the range of your home Bluetooth or Wi-Fi. Now, once it's out of the range, you haven't lost it. That's the whole point, because now what Apple have done is they've set it up so that everyone's iPhone, everyone's iPad, everyone's Mac, any internet-connected Apple device can be used to detect the location of that thing. So we our devices are being used in a way that is very clever. There may be some security issues about Apple using our devices in this way, but on the face of it, there's a lot more upside to downside, because as long as your motorbike is within range of a device, or someone walks past it, or within range of it, you know, for a period of time, then that phone will without that owner's knowledge, will signal back to say, we've located that AirTag. And there have been people that have used them to track AirTags that have gone through the postal system, and you know, all sorts of weird and wonderful experiments have been done. The AirTags were only announced a month or two ago. But check out the Tile ones as well. The Tiles obviously don't leverage the Apple devices, but they have their own network that they've set up. Plus, they've recently cut a deal with Amazon, so our Amazon smart speakers will also become a part of this network. So it's quite interesting that, you know, our own personal devices, once again, like we talked about our cameras having their footage usurped, here in a slightly more benign way, our mobile devices are being used to help spot stolen and missing items. Mm. So yeah,
even Henry's motorbike.
Yeah, Henry can do it. And what I would suggest is, you know, if Henry wants to go out and buy one of these items, buy it from somewhere where, you know, they'll take it back within 14 or 30 days, no questions asked, and just give it a go. You know, just ride your motorcycle somewhere. Leave
and they're not expensive, these Tiles and AirTags, are they?
The Tiles have got really cheap recently because Apple has launched its competitor, and, you know, Tile is, you know, is being what they call Sherlocked, you know, like the clever third-party service is now becoming mainstream with one of the big manufacturers. I can't remember the exact price, but they're a few tens of pounds each. And you can buy them in packs of three, and they work out a bit more cheaply as well. And it's much cheaper than losing your motorbike. And you don't have, you don't have running costs. It's not like the earlier devices where you would have to, I think there was one called Tracker, which was for cars, and you'd have to pay an annual subscription to that. It was not cheap, but people were
using them
to protect. I think they're still going, as far as I know. But
yeah,
they were using them to protect sort of high value vehicles. You know, so people were willing to pay, you know, an annual subscription charge. But these are a one off cost. And they work quite well. I've used both of them. I've tested both of them myself. And, you know, I think the AirTags in particular have got some real benefits.
Great. Thank you, Henry. Good luck with that one. Got a question here from Lawrence in Barnet. I think this is about Windows 11. Is that right?
Yep. Good morning. Yes.
Hi.
So, not so much hardware capacity, but configuration. I heard, I mean, there are rumours flying around, and appreciated, but too early, too difficult, you know, to know exactly what Microsoft's got in mind. But I've heard that certain machines, you know, going back 5 years, will not be officially supported.
Yeah, so this is a new version of Windows. So the current version is Windows 10. Microsoft have announced Windows 11. And it's not completely new. You know, a lot of the code is the same. It's got what's called the same code base. So the launching of Windows 11 is as much marketing as it is technical. Yes, there are new features, but there have been many new features introduced whilst it was called Windows 10 over a period of years. In terms of what's required, my understanding is that any computer will need to have a minimum of 64 gigabytes of storage. That's to say the hard drive, and that, you know, that's quite low. My feeling is if you had only 64 gigabytes, you'd be in trouble with your day-to-day work anyway. But in theory, it will run on a computer with 64 gigabytes of storage and a minimum of 4 gigabytes of RAM. And there are not many computers running that have less than that now, but there are some. So it is conceivable that something that is just about managing to run Windows 10 may fail to run Windows 11, which brings us to the question of what Microsoft's behavior going forward will be when Windows 11 launches. Will they do what they were accused of doing last time, which was foisting Windows 10 on people, sometimes without their knowledge and consent? And some people woke up in the morning and found that their computer had been turned into the functionality of a brick because it had updated overnight and that something had gone wrong, and suddenly that computer no longer worked. And I know that there were court cases and even class actions in some parts of the world against Microsoft. So I hope that they won't do that, and they will let people decide whether or not they want to run Windows 11 and when they want to do it. But at some point, I think Windows 10 users will be forced for two reasons. One is that Microsoft will withdraw support for Windows 10. And the other thing is that when we took on Windows 10, we agreed in the contract with Microsoft to something called Windows as a Service. So we agreed to let them manage the product in terms of the updates. So one day what they could just simply do is make the Windows 11 an update, which they manage, and they could do it without our explicit consent, because the consent would have been in the Windows 10 user license. So, so there are machines out there that won't be able to run Windows 11, even though they run Windows 10. But those machines, I think, would be getting on for 10 years old or more.
Right. I'm quite glad I haven't got Windows. I don't like the idea that you have to update.
Yeah, I mean, the only people that have been able to stop it and delay it are corporate users who sort of pay more for their licenses, because, you know, stability for businesses is everything. They don't need the latest whiz-bang features. What they need is something that's rock solid. And some of these businesses are using, you know, code that's 20 to 30 years old, but it works and no one wants to touch it. So, you know, and actually, you know, some of these companies are still paying for updates to Windows XP. A large number of our cash machines outside banks and building sites still run Windows XP. And in lifts and other things, sometimes you see them when it goes wrong and you get a Windows error message popping up on the screen of something that you didn't know was running Windows. And they, because of the cost of, you know, upgrading every cash machine in the country, they are able to and do pay Microsoft for the right to have Windows XP and Windows 10 updates. And what that's really interesting, that tells us, is Microsoft are still developing those updates. It's just that they don't want the rest of us to have them, because they don't make money if we carry on using 20-year-old technology on our systems.
Of course.
That's the problem.
Lawrence, thank you very much. More questions in a moment. Fevzi Turkalp's with us here on LBC 2:45.
This is LBC with Clive Bull.
And Fevzi Turkalp is with me from GadgetDetective.com. Until three, we'll do our best to answer as many questions as we can. I know you also want to tell us about iCloud Plus. This is going back to our discussion about security and privacy and so on. What is iCloud Plus then?
So iCloud, which already exists, is Apple's cloud service where it enables you to effectively rent space in the cloud for purposes of backup and security camera footage and putting your photos on it and all the rest of it. You get, I think, 5 gigabytes free with your Apple device. And then there's a sort of sliding scale. I think 50 gigabytes is about £1 a month or something like that. And you can go right up to 2 terabytes, that's to say 2,000 gigabytes of cloud storage, which you can rent. Now, that's been there for a while, but at the recent Worldwide Developer Conference earlier this month, they announced something called iCloud Plus, which has some great new privacy features. One of them is called Private Relay, which I love. It's a bit like a VPN, but it's different, a virtual private network. These are to help maintain your privacy. Now, we've spoken in the past about how big tech profile us so that they know what our shopping habits are, they know what websites we visit, they probably know how we vote, they know our sexual orientation, they pretty much know everything about us, even more than sometimes our own loved ones do, because they get all these bits of data. And again, one of your earlier callers was mentioning about how these bits of data can be combined to form a much bigger picture. You know, you join together all the metadata and you can work out who's doing what, who's having an affair, who's voting a particular way. You know, and this is partly what Cambridge Analytica did when it scraped the data from Facebook. It worked out who we were, what we believed in, what our prejudices were, and then it played to those. So coming back to Private Relay, what Private Relay does for Apple users who use the iCloud Plus service is when you're browsing the internet, it separates two key pieces of information. There's one bit of information is which websites do you visit, and the other one is who are you, where are you, what's your IP address. Now, normally, when those two things are brought together, the person is identifiable from the IP address, you know, and using other data to sort of triangulate and work out who the individual is, not just what the location is. And then you can see where that person goes online, what they do, what they're interested in. This is valuable data for all, you know, commercial and other reasons. But what Apple does is it's of course that information has to be known to various nodes or bodies along the way in order for you to get to the website. You can't say, I want to go to a website, but don't tell anyone where you want to go. But what they do is they separate out those two bits of information. So some parties will know which websites are being visited, whilst other parties will know who you are. But no single party should know both pieces of information. Therefore, it should make it difficult or possibly even impossible, though one should never say impossible, as nothing is, but it should make it very difficult for companies that make money out of tracking us and, you know, making our profile of us based on our browsing habits. It make it very difficult for them to do that, because they'll see that someone is visiting that that interesting website, let's say, but we won't know who, and we'll know that, you know, Fevzi's online, but we don't know where.
Right. Yeah,
so you'd
have to pay for this as an extra service, would you? Is that the idea?
Yeah, I think, well, they're not charging any more than the current rates that people are paying for the storage. So this is additional functionality for the same money. And I think the free tier is still there, but I think some of this additional is not there. Now, the other thing that I really liked was hide my email. Now, I've been talking to people a long time about, you know, being secure when you sign up for services online, and we talk a lot about having unique passwords, don't we? We say, okay, have a separate password for your bank and your building society and Amazon and, you know, the games console that you log on with. And the reason for that is because when one of those entities gets hacked, and is when rather than if, and we find out that they haven't encrypted your password, so then your email address and your password in combination is known, and you've used that same combination of email address and password elsewhere. That's how, you know, your bank account can be emptied, even though your bank was never hacked, is because we've used it. So we use password managers to stop that, but that's for the password. Now, you can do the same thing with the email address. So what Apple will do with this Hide My Email is they will provide you with automatically generated fake email addresses. Now, so when you sign up for a service, so let's say I want to sign up for a service and I need to give an email address because they're going to send me just a one-off email to say, okay, is that email address genuine? And I click confirm and then I've signed up to that, I don't know, the book club or the, you know, or whatever it is, you know, where you have to give your username and password. Now, what happens is the email address is not yours, But then Apple makes sure that anything that is sent to that email address is forwarded to your real email address, which is underlying. And the benefit is that, so the third party never sees your true email address, but when they send it to the dummy email address, it gets forwarded to you. You see it, you can reply to it, and you can reply to it again without identifying your true email address. So it provides you with this great additional layer of security. Not only can you have a different password for every service that you subscribe to on the internet, you can have a different email address.
I like it.
Optimal.
It's clever.
And I won't be, you know, surprising you greatly to say I've been doing that by another method for
years.
Yes,
I'm sure. I will give that a go. Let's take another call. Here's Phil in Cannock. Hello, Phil.
Right, I'm just wanted to talk about basically the AI augmentation of, like, say, people with, like, motor neuron disease and impairments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so with the surveillance and everything on the cameras, when they pick up the facial recognition, people with, like, impairments, they've got, say, muscle spasms and things like that. So how would they know that they're getting the right people? Because, like, say, is it the Burns Institute, which is cybernetics? It learns the body, so, like, you know, the veterans and everything. It trains the body to actually work again. But with AI recognition, like, on the streets and, like, say, crime and things like that, what's the percentage of getting it right or getting it wrong?
Right. So there are many factors that can. So the technology is nascent. It's new. It's not. Although it's artificial intelligence, it's not that smart yet. But so at the moment, the error rates can be quite high. That's all the more reason why, you know, reliance shouldn't be put on these systems, because people can end up in jail cells, people can lose jobs and have relationships damaged by police, you know, misidentifying people. And I know in China they use it to pick people out of stadiums that they think are guilty of some sort of antisocial or criminal behaviour. So there is that problem. I mean, it is such a, you know, the technology itself is neither good nor evil. I mean, you mentioned diseases like multiple sclerosis and, you know, you think about dementia. There are apps that can run on smartphones now that can pick up the very early signs of illnesses like multiple sclerosis or any illness where, for example, there's, you know, the beginnings of muscular deterioration. It can pick up changes in speech patterns. So early MS, early dementia, can be detected before either the user of the phone or anyone else is aware of it, that there are changes in the speech patterns and the stability of the hand and the gait with which we walk. All of these things can be early signs of diseases that are best treated if we know that they're coming before there are major symptoms. So there are these great, you know, there are these great things that are possible. I often think that AI will solve all of our problems in a sort of 5-minute window just before it takes over completely and doesn't care about us. It'll solve global warming, it'll cure disease and cancer and all the rest of it.
And then we will be humans.
And then we will be crushed by our dark overlords who decide that we are a scourge upon the planet.
Well, if they haven't made that film, they need to. Phil, thank you very much. Very interesting question. Now, we've only got a couple of minutes left, but if I can get a couple of quick answers from you on these questions.
Sure.
Here. Timmy says, can Fevzi suggest an easy to use, inexpensive MP3 player that doesn't need iTunes, where you can shuffle tracks from different folders?
Right. So most people use smartphones for this, and if you have any sort of, even a non-smartphone, will often have the ability to store MP3. So look at what you've already got, Timmy, because you might just find that even the most basic phone has that ability, which is why, you know, Apple stopped producing iPods, because iPhones and so
because
forth.
Everyone's got an MP3 player on their phone.
Yeah,
normally.
Yeah, exactly. Right. They sort of did for their own market category. There are things, you know, if you go on to retailers like Amazon, there's all sorts of sort of independent retailers, but they tend to be the smaller ones now. The only ones that are sort of upmarket are the ones that don't do MP3, but so MP3 is a compressed form of recording of audio, but there are what are called lossless formats, where it's compressed but no data is lost, and therefore, you know, you get the full quality. It's not, you know, I haven't compressed the hell out of it, because, you know, sometimes a bad MP3 can sound similar to a cassette tape. You know, it depends on how much
I remember those.
How much they've squeezed it. Yeah. So you can look, you know, you can look online, but bear in mind, unless you're talking about one of the specialist units that, that are designed for lossless audio, that a lot of them are from, you know, brands that you've never really heard of, but you can get one for like 10, 15, 20 pounds.
Okay.
It just depends what functionality you want from it, really.
Another quickie from Doug here. I've been told that it's a good idea to change my hard drives on my computers to SSD drives. Is it a good idea? Will it make my computer faster?
So SSD is a solid-state drive. It does the same job as a hard drive, but it has no moving parts, which can convey a number of benefits, particularly to users of laptops, but also to desktop computers. So they are much, much faster to read and write information. They use less power. So if you're talking about a laptop, they, the battery life improves. They generate less heat, which means they, they're quieter because the fans don't have to go up. And they don't have moving parts. So if you drop them, they're more likely to survive. So those are the benefits. The other thing to say is that hard drives, if they've been in a computer for a while, I mean, a hard drive will fail. It may go 5 years, it may go 10, it may go 15, but at some point that hard drive will fail, and if you haven't got a backup, all the information will go with it. So if the hard drive is, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years old, then there is an argument for replacing it with a solid-state drive. The only thing to say is if the machine is quite old, you have to be careful not to fall into the trap of spending money upgrading a machine that will, you know, although will be improved by it, will never be fast because the underlying technology and infrastructure is limited anyway. So there comes a point when a machine is, you know, 6, 7 years old, I would say, where you're probably better putting the money into a new machine, even a basic one, which will come with a solid state drive anyway, and have all the other benefits of having a new machine. And that the basic machine costing £300 now will outperform a £1,000 machine of a few years ago.
And Zach says, what was the name of that dummy email service? Well, that was the iCloud Plus thing, wasn't it?
Yeah. So yeah, it's part of iCloud Plus. So if you've got Apple devices and you sign up to our iCloud Plus, the part of it that is called Hide My Email, and the other bit we refer to was called Private Relay, where they separate the IP address from the websites that you visit.
Right. So if you're on iCloud storage and you're paying your 70p a month or whatever, would that come as part and parcel of it?
Yeah, it will.
Okay. Well, that sounds very good indeed. We've run out of time, I'm afraid, Fevzi, but if anyone has further questions, I'm sure at some point you'd be able to answer them, maybe on Twitter. You're at Gadget Detective, and you can visit the website as well, gadgetdetective.com. Fevzi, thank you very much. Great to talk to you, as ever. We'll talk to you again very soon, I hope.